the engineer replied. We're going through the final checkout. Be ready to fire up the beast in 10 minutes or so. The control center had been a blockhouse years ago when the Air Force was testing rocket engines for missiles at this remote desert site. It was unglamorous, strictly utilitarian. Bare concrete walls, half a dozen desk-sized consoles with their display screens and keyboards, strip lamps across the steel beams supporting the ceiling, a panel of monitoring gauges fastened to the concrete of the rear wall. The air conditioning was pitiful. Several of the men's shirts were already sweat-stained, and the shirt of the one woman on the team, Taki Nakamura, clung to her slim bosom.
"Very well, then," Levy said stiffly as he pulled out a handkerchief and mopped his brow. "Let's get down to business and show the general what our coil can do."
One wall of the concrete building had been punched through, and a long window of thick safety glass looked out on the laser itself. The coil sat in its own open shed beneath a flimsy roof of corrugated metal supported by four steel beams. Pete Quintana picked up a cordless screwdriver and stepped through the blockhouse's steel door, out into the shed.
"Where are you going, Quintana?"
Levy demanded, frowning. Harry thought maybe Pete went outside because it's a little cooler out there where there's at least a little breeze blowing than in here with this crappy air conditioning. But Pete answered softly, his voice muffled by the thick glass of the safety window.
"Tightening up the mount. Keep the vibration level down." "You shouldn't be out there when we're counting down," Levy yelled. "I'll be back inside in a minute. Start the countdown. It's okay."
Levy frowned but turned to Harry and said darkly, "Start the countdown." Harry glanced at General Scheib, then shrugged. Turning to Delaney, he said, "Start the sequence timer, Monk." Half a mile out on the desert sat the target, the sawed-off end of a cargo plane, fat round the fuselage and big tail fins sticking up into the cloudless blue sky. There were several pinpoint holes in the plane's aluminum skin, blackened from the heat of the laser's beam. General Scheib came up beside Harry and looked out at the laser assembly. "We can't have fuss budgets tinkering when we're flying that dingus. It's got to work without last-second adjustments." "It will," Harry said tightly.
"Of course it will," Levy added.
But the slight shift of his brow told Harry he was not happy. Harry picked up the intercom microphone.
"Hey, Pete, you'd better cut it short and get in here."
Still with his back to the safety window, Quintana hollered,
"Yeah, yeah, I'm coming."
"Now," Harry said, "we want to start her up."
"So start her. I just want to check the vibration absorber on the optics platform. I'll be inside before you get her warmed up."
Harry looked at Levy, who frowned, but said resignedly, "Get on with it." Scheib shook his head slightly and thought that these civilians liked to play with the equipment. Engineers, they fall in love with the hardware, but they've got to make this beast foolproof so that tech sergeants can run it without a half-dozen geeks tinkering with it all the time. He heard the whine of the electrical power generator starting up as he peered through the window. Quintana straightened up and planted his hands on his hips, as if admiring the equipment he had helped to build. The coil looked to Scheib more like a miniature junkyard than a flight-weight laser system. Scheib knew the numbers and understood that these engineers had sized the laser to fit inside the capacious frame of a modified Boeing 747. Barely. But in the eyes of the newly minted general, those pressure vessels and pumps and all that piping certainly didn't look like something that could ever get off the ground. Congratulations.